You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche, and we have a few members of the borough staff with us today. Why don't you go around and introduce yourself, starting with you, Jack.
Okay, thank you. I'm Jack Maker. I'm an associate planner with the Kodiak Island Borough Community Development Department. Been in Kodiak this time for just about 17 years. Came up with the Coast Guard in the mid-80s, and it took me 12 years to get back. Have been involved in the community. I actually did a little time on the city council, retired from the Coast Guard, stayed here, worked my way into the borough, and it's about my seventh year with the borough, just starting my seventh year with the borough right now. Worked my way from code enforcement up to associate planner within the department.
My name's Daniel McKenna Foster. I'm also an associate planner, looking at more of the long-range planning side of things. I'm a bit of more recent arrival than Jack. I just got here last year, but so far I love it. I'm really excited about working here, and there's a lot of cool stuff going on. This is a really cool place, very special place. And so I've been working as a planner for a few years. I think I've always been a planner. I didn't really know what that was until the last 5 years or so, and I found my kind of passion in planning. And so I'm glad to be here, and I'm really looking forward to a lot of the great work that our department is doing.
I'm Sarah Mason. I'm the director of the Community Development Department. I've been around for a year as of last week. Last week was my one-year anniversary with the Kodiak Island Borough. I came from Juneau, and then before that I was in Anchorage, and before that I was in Fairbanks. So I've called a couple different places in Alaska home, and I've worked on some planning projects as far north as Barrow, as far west as the Aleutians, and as far south and east as Ketchikan. So you've kind of been all over the place. Our state's pretty fantastic, but Kodiak's my favorite. So
it's cool that you've been to so many locations in Alaska. I feel like you might be able to give some new insight into housing situations in these small communities.
They're all different. I think that's what really, like, I've taken away. I mean, you can have a population of the same size. You can have an economy that's built kind of on the same things. But every community kind of just has their own flow, their own vibe, their own identity. So,
yeah, definitely. And we're here to talk about Kodiak's identity as far as housing goes, and maybe changing it possibly. So we're looking at a possible new zoning district to make room for smaller lots. So, Jack, you said you wrote this one?
Yeah. I'm the one staff member that's been with this since the beginning. I think we actually started discussions on this with the commission in October 2015. So it's been something we've briefly been discussing, and we got through some other code revisions and finally got serious about this, I'd say 3-4 months ago, going through it line by line, working with the commission to come up with the language that is in the packet and that we provided you.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about what this would do for the zoning district?
Well, this is a brand new zoning district. Right now, your R1 single-family residential, R2 two-family residential, and R3 multifamily residential districts, which are higher density, smaller lot, urban residential districts. Minimum lot area for a new subdivision would be 7,200 square foot. Staff has done some research, quite a bit of extensive research, and we've found that lots much smaller than that are capable of accommodating single-family dwellings while meeting all your yard setback requirements and providing the required parking. So this particular ordinance recommends lots of 3,600 square feet that will be permitted to be developed with single-family dwellings. The idea behind it, one part of the intent, is to reduce the land costs associated with single-family residential development. A lot half the size won't necessarily be half the price, but it'll certainly be less than a 7,200-square-foot lot, so somebody can get into land for lesser cost. Also, it could encourage smaller housing types, although these lots are capable of accommodating large homes over 2,500 square feet in some instances, but they could promote smaller housing types. And also one of the other things we've done is required a minimum land area to establish this district. It's important to point out that this is a new zoning district. It has not been established yet. It would take a developer with land that meets our requirements, which you have to have at least 1.5 acres of contiguous or owned land in order to establish this district. If a developer had that land and decided to do a small lot subdivision, they could certainly pursue that through our department. One of the big reasons for the 1.5 acre requirement before you subdivide is that we want, if somebody comes in to establish this district, we want it to be a standalone subdivision. We don't want somebody to come in with a 7,200 square foot lot and subdivide it down the middle, and now we've got this little micro small lot subdivision with smaller homes on smaller lots surrounded by larger lots with larger homes. We don't want it to impact the characteristic of the surrounding subdivision, so we have the 1.5 acre requirement. Like I said, we're hoping it will promote reduced land costs and promote smaller housing types and allow people to get into their own home for considerably less than what it takes to get into your own home right now.
Could you talk a little bit about what structures would be allowed on the lands? I saw in some of the records that there's a provision for hoop houses. There's a water and sewer provision. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Certainly. Permitted uses in this new zoning district, if it gets approved, would be single-family dwellings, one accessory building. An accessory building could be a detached garage or shop or shed, basically a building that's incidental and subordinate to the residential use of the main building. Home occupations, which we can get into later if you want, but it's just a small home-based business that can only occupy 25% of the dwelling unit. And hoop houses. Hoop houses are allowed in all zoning districts. That was a movement that came forth probably about 2010, 2011 to basically extend our growing season. So we allow those in all residential zoning districts. Now, the reason we limited to one accessory building is because of lot coverage. You know, if you have your home and the detached unit on these smaller lots, you know, it's going to take up a lot of the property. So we wanted to maintain a certain residential characteristic within the neighborhood. Also, we left out more intensive R1 single-family residential zoning district permitted uses such as churches, parks, playgrounds, because the smaller lot sizes really can't accommodate that type of development. They can't provide the required parking and that type of thing. So.
And could someone, while we're at it, explain the different zoning districts?
Sure. I guess I'll take that one. So as Jack mentioned, R1, which is single-family residential, R2, which is two-family residential, and R3, which is multifamily residential, currently are our three residential zoning districts that are under the umbrella of our urban residential land use designation in the comprehensive plan. That was completed in 2008. We also have a kind of a sibling to that for rural residential. So in the comp plan, we also have a rural residential land use. And underneath the umbrella of that is RR, which is rural residential, RR1, which is rural residential 1, and RR2, which is rural residential 2. And really for those, I think the defining characteristics are the size, the minimum lot size for the property. There's other differences too. You know, there's some things that might be allowed in RR1, for example, that are not allowed in RR, like agricultural uses. But right now, that's kind of that's our residential structure for zoning and land use. We also have the conservation zoning district, which doesn't, you know, fit squarely within either of those land uses, because conservation in and of itself is considered a land use in the 2008 comprehensive plan. But single family residential is a really common use on conservation zone land. So in our office, we kind of consider conservation as a residential zoning district. So those are the seven zoning districts that we most often deal with when we're talking about residential structures. We do have some businesses, for example, you know, like downtown in the square there, we've got businesses that have apartments upstairs, and those are allowed in the business zoning district because the residential structure is it's a subordinate use to the business structure. But for the purposes of discussing residential zoning, we thought, you know, there we could probably use a little bit more variety, because a lot of the housing stock in Kodiak, I mean, it's not very, characteristically, it's not very diverse, but we've got a lot of really diverse populations. So over the last few years, for sure, there's been a growing awareness in town, and there's been increased community dialogue about the need for more housing options here in Kodiak. And we've never done a housing study that's given us definitive numbers and data describing our actual housing issues. But there's a lot of qualitative information that we do know. I mean, we know that it's not cheap to live here in general. It's really expensive to live on a remote island. We know that a lot of our moderate to low income community members have been displaced in recent years. Most recently, Jackson's, you know, but before that we had, you know, Trident bought the apartment. We also know that when looking at national statistics, national trends, adding options like small lot residential zoning districts, it really appeals to the demographic that's buying right now. Not everyone is looking for a 2,500 square foot house anymore with lots of property. They kind of want to go back to that tighter knit community feel, maybe having some more freedoms that having a lower cost would afford them, you know, more vacations, things like that. We've heard from some people that, you know, the material costs for actual construction, you know, aren't necessarily going to be lower just because you're building a smaller house on a smaller lot. But over time, the maintenance of that structure is less. Your taxes are lower, and presumably your utilities are less as well. And as Jack mentioned earlier, the cost of raw land is less because the lot's much smaller. So this ordinance has kind of gone hand in hand with the ADU ordinance, which is going before the assembly next week at their regular meeting, and then the planned unit development ordinance that Daniel's going to be working on, which hopefully is a start to providing a lot more of those options for people.
Yeah, I definitely want to touch on the accessory dwelling unit issue, because that's kind of been ongoing. And I'd be just curious to know, is something similar, this kind of zoning district, have you seen that in some of the communities that you've been in?
Yeah, there's plenty of places where smaller lots are kind of the norm. And that's not, you know, just like in Alaska, for example. I mean, that's nationwide. And if you look at the older parts of most cities, the lots are significantly smaller. That's the story here in Kodiak as well. I think Daniel had an interesting statistic the other day of the number of R1 zoned lots in Kodiak that are already below that 7,200 square foot threshold.
If you look at the tax rolls and you just kind of sort by square footage, it's something like in each zone, I think in R1 is about 32-33% are smaller than 7,200. In R2, it's about 18, and then in R3, it's about the same 32-33%. So that just means that we already have lots that are smaller than the standard lot size in our community. And so we might already have these kind of residential small lots that exist. with houses on them and people like them. Because the zoning code doesn't necessarily reflect the actual situation in our built environment. And also houses have gotten bigger over time, looking at census information. And so it isn't that people aren't used to smaller houses or smaller properties. It's just sort of maybe a product of the way housing markets and things have gone over the last few years. But here in Kodiak, we have a lot of this already, and it's sort of just making sure that more of the existing structures and existing sort of patterns of the built environment are kind of fit with the existing code.
And just to add in a little bit, the current lot size, if somebody comes in and wants to subdivide an R1, R2, R3 zone lot, is 7,200 square foot. It wasn't always 7,200 square foot. Back in the day, it seemed like the average in the downtown area of Kodiak in your residential areas was a 5,000 square foot lot. There's some lots that are down to 3,000 square foot. Mm-hmm. And these are developed lots. And if there is a vacant lot out there, it doesn't mean that, oh, it's nonconforming, you can't build on it. It's what we call
legal nonconformity.
Yeah, a legal nonconformity, or it's a conforming, nonconforming lot of record. So you can still develop those lots. You just have to develop in such a manner that you meet the 25-foot front yard setback requirement, 5-foot side yard, 10-foot rear yard setback requirement. So it's completely a legal lot that can be developed.
Yeah, and so for those who might not be familiar with the process of getting something like this into reality, can you talk a little bit about how planning and zoning gets involved in that whole process?
Certainly. As I said, this ordinance is just to establish this district. It doesn't exist yet. If a developer has one or a pair of developers with adjoining lands that total 1.5 acres would decide to create one of these subdivisions, the first thing they would do would be to come into our department and submit a rezone of that property to this new zoning district, the RSL, or small lot single family residential district. During that process, we would also look at the comprehensive plan future land use designation. What did the public, when we came up with our comprehensive plan, want that property to be used for in the future? If it's not urban residential, then we may have to also do a comprehensive plan amendment. So they would put in for their rezone. It would go before planning and zoning for public hearing. The surrounding property owners would be notified, and it would also be advertised in the paper as required by our code, so there would be plenty of opportunity for public comment at that time. And if, you know, for the rezone and the comp plan amendment, if that was actually required, should the rezone be approved, the next step would be for the developer to hook up with the surveyor and basically lay out his design and submit what we call a preliminary plat. The preliminary plat is just kind of a conceptual design that shows us what he wants to do. We verify that the lot design and everything is correct and it meets all the requirements of our subdivision code. That, because you would be creating so many lots, would also have to go before P&Z. So there's another opportunity for public input and public comment. The next step after that would be to bring that preliminary plat before the Planning and Zoning Commission for a public hearing. They would grant or deny preliminary approval, and they can condition that. Typically, staff recommends conditions, and the commission can recommend additional conditions. Once the preliminary approval has been received, then the next step would be for the developer to work with the surveyor to come up with the final plat. Once the final plat has been reviewed by us and approved, then it'll be sent off to the state recorder's office for recording. And once it's recorded, then the developer could choose to sell the lots or choose to develop each lot on his own with smaller homes or whatever type of home he wanted to develop on there. But the emphasis I want to make is, you know, this isn't something that's just going to pop up, you know, within your neighborhood without the people in that neighborhood having more than adequate opportunity to provide public comment on the whole process. So,
could you guys talk a little bit about the role of developers in opening up land in Kodiak?
Well, You know, I can say that there have been a couple developers, I won't name them, that have expressed an interest and believe that they have properties that are what we call shovel ready. They're ready to go ahead and put in for their rezone if this ordinance were to go through. So there is interest from the developers in town. And I think it's, you know, I think it's intrigued enough people to where we will see one of these subdivisions not too long after this code is adopted, if it is adopted. And I'm hoping that if that does happen, people take a look at it and go, oh, wow, and it just promotes more of this type of development, which will provide more opportunity and housing options for people. I mean, that's why we looked at ADUs. That's where we're looking at the small lot subdivision, you know, looking at opportunities for not just for rental housing, but for like the ADUs for, you know, people to provide their aging mother or father with a place to stay, typical mother-in-law apartment, kids, you know, coming home from college, or kids that are going to work into the workforce here, provide them with their own place. The smaller lots lower the land costs, provide opportunities for, you know, those who may choose a more minimalist lifestyle with a smaller home to pursue that. So that's kind of where we're going with these housing options, is we want to provide this opportunity for the community.
Okay. And so why don't we touch on accessory dwelling units a little bit, kind of give some background about that and update listeners on what's happening with that?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, the ADU ordinance is it's finally before the assembly this upcoming week at their regular meeting. So they'll be talking about it in their packet review on Thursday. Because this is such a large item, they also have it on the agenda as a separate work session item for Thursday. So, you know, we welcome the public to come and listen to the work session to get up and give comment on the items before they start the meeting. This ordinance has been around for quite some time, and it was actually around before my time. Jack has been around since the very beginning of this one too, but it's P&Z had 6 or 7 public hearings on ADUs, lots of work sessions where they talked about ADUs.
Lots of revisions of the ordinance.
Lots and of them.
You know, amendments by substituting a whole new ordinance. It was a challenge to keep track of everything, but we kept track of it, and the packet is 560-some or 70-some pages long. It's a big one.
Yeah, so P&Z voted in, I do believe, October. It was September or October. September, I think.
September, yeah.
Yeah, they voted in September to forward this to the Assembly, but the Assembly's had lots of time-sensitive, really big issues that they've been dealing with for the last few months. So some things have kind of settled as we're getting here into the new year, and I'm sure that they'll have several public hearings on this item as well. So,
can someone briefly define what qualifies as an ADU?
Sure, there's all sorts of qualifications.
Yeah,
it can't be above a certain square footage based on the zoning district that it's in. It can only have one bedroom. It can only have one bathroom, and a kitchen living area. It has to have a separate entrance. The separate entrance cannot be at the front of the building to give a single family home a duplex kind of look. So the entrance to the ADU has to be side or rear. Obviously, has to meet building codes, fire codes, electrical, sewer, and water. It cannot be on its own sewer and water connection. It has to be connected to the water and sewer for the principal dwelling.
And it's important to point out, too, that an ADU can be a conversion of a portion of an interior existing single-family residence, or it could be an addition attached to an existing single-family residence, or it can actually be a detached, separate little cottage. And, of course, any type of development that changes the footprint, be it an addition or attachment to an existing home or construction of a detached ADU, would require that that structure meet all of our setback requirements and other zoning requirements, too.
So it looks like we only have a couple more minutes, but is there a hearing of some sort coming up related to this possible ordinance?
Yes, actually, it is scheduled for public hearing at the January 18th, 2017, Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting, which starts at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers, and that's next Wednesday. And we will also be, the Commission will also be reviewing the packet for this particular ordinance at the work session tomorrow night, which starts at 6:30 p.m. in the conference room at the Borough.
Wednesday?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we close up?
I'll say planned unit developments will also be on the ticket for tomorrow night, Wednesday, and next week as well. So for anybody interested in that sort of development, please join us.
Yeah, I would encourage the public to attend these meetings if they have an interest in this at all. I think some good ideas are coming forward, and naturally we want to be as transparent as possible, and we want to give the public every opportunity they can to comment on, you know, our ideas and what the Planning and Zoning Commission is working on.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, you guys. We've been talking about a possible new zoning district for smaller lots. Thanks for tuning in.